are really nuts, you know? Nuts? One of these days they're gonna come over here and lock you up.
Oh, lay off of me, will
you? You ain't playing with a full deck, Eunice. I think somebody blew your pilot light out.
I love you. That gown is gorgeous.
Thank you. I saw it in the window and I just couldn't resist it.
Are you going to be on next season?
Yes, unless you know something I don't.
Do you mean earlier or later or what?
What, dear?
Sometimes I fall asleep when I come to work.
Sometimes you fall asleep during our show.
Now, you think you understand this the way this works here?
Sure.
You understand that perfectly?
Yeah.
All right, Say, would you go into my office for a minute?
It's stuck.
Why are you trying to go through a locked door?
You told me to.
If I told you to jump out the window, would you do that?
No.
That's too bad. I had some hope for that one.
Gay player on 720 WGN. Emmy Award-winning hit variety series, The Carol Burnett Show, turns 50 this year, which originally entertained us for 11 seasons, starring Carol Burnett, Harvey Korman, Vicki Lawrence, Lyle Wagner, and Tim Conway, and featuring some of the most memorable characters ever on television. The Carol Burnett Show 50th Anniversary Special airs tonight at 7 Central on CBS. And now to look back at this iconic series is the legendary Carol Burnett. Hello, Carol.
Hey, Gabe.
Well, it is both a thrill and a genuine honor to have a little time with you, and I admit I am ridiculously nervous. I need a cocktail or something.
Well, I'll wait while you go get one.
Okay, terrific. Well, I'm so excited about the 50th anniversary special airing tonight, and I want to start with your story on how all this came together, and it's very inspirational. You received a $1,000 anonymous check to begin your journey to Hollywood.
It was a loan, and this gentleman and his wife saw me perform at a party, and I was at UCLA at the time, and they said, what do you want to be, what do you want to do with your life? And I said, well, someday I want to be able to go to New York and be on Broadway. And they said, well, why aren't you there now? I said, well, we were poor. And I said, well, I'm saving up. I'm hoping to get. And he said, I'll lend you the money. And he lent me $1,000, which to go to New York on. And that really jump-started my career. Paid him back 5 years to the day that he lent me the money. But that gave me my start.
But that was $1,000 in the 1950s. That was a lot
that
of money.
That was a lot of money. Yeah. I'd never seen that many zeros in my life, And he said there were stipulations. He said, one, you must use this money to go to New York on. Two, it's a loan. You pay it back in 5 years if you are successful. Three, you must never reveal my name. And four, if you are successful, you must help others out.
Wow.
That you have faith in.
Wow. What a great mission, and what an incredible opportunity. That doesn't happen every day.
No, not at all. And so that gave me the courage to go. I'd never been further east than Texas, I had no idea when I landed in New York what I was going to do, where I was going to live. It was pretty, but I wasn't scared.
You had confidence.
I had confidence because I was raised on the movies that starred Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney, where everything was going to be fine. And that was my imprint as a child, being raised during that era with those movies. Everything worked out, the good guys got it, the bad guys didn't, it didn't work for them. And so I was never cynical.
And that gave you the drive
That's
to succeed.
Right.
To succeed.
Yep.
And yes. from there, I know you did what every hungry actor did. You worked jobs around town until you got your first gig on the Paul Winchell and Jerry Mahoney show. And,
right.
And years after that, after appearances on The Tonight Show with Jack Parr and Ed Sullivan, you got the Gary Moore show. And I know Gary, you've always cited as one of your mentors.
Oh, he was so kind. And he kind of, I mean, this is what I did with my show. I kind of copied what Gary did. Because I would remember we would sit around the table. You know, we'd have a table reading on a Monday for the Friday show. And if he had a joke or something he wasn't too sure about himself, he would say, you know what, Durward, you take this punchline. You can say it funnier. Or he'd say it to me. Give this to Carol. She can say it funnier than I can. And so he was not afraid to share. You know, so we were a true rep company, and that's what I wanted with my show, that even though my name was on it, there would be many sketches where I'd be supporting Harvey or Tim or Vicky, and then they'd be supporting me. So it was a true, true rep company, which is what I fashioned for after doing Gary's show.
He let others shine. And
absolutely, because it only makes your show better.
It does. It does. And he's a guy that nobody, you know, unfortunately, there's just not Gary Moore's name isn't mentioned enough in the pioneering of television.
You're absolutely right. It was a wonderful comedy variety show. And the music, some of the production numbers were totally worthy of Broadway. And that's what I wanted my show to do, too. To, you know, we mounted what would amount to a musical comedy review every week. And, you know, and we did it just like you do a Broadway show.
Yeah, well, you went to Broadway, you did all kinds of guest appearances, you had so many TV specials, and you pulled the trigger on that contract you had with CBS right at the tail end.
That's right.
And you said, let's do this variety series. And they went, what?
They didn't remember that it was in the contract, and that if I wanted to do an hour-long variety show, all I had to do was the button, and they would have to put it on for 30 one-hour pay-or-play weeks.
Wow.
And they didn't want that was in the contract, and they didn't want to do it. And they said, we want you to do a sitcom, you know, called, get this, Here's Agnes.
It sounds horrible.
I said, but I don't want to be the same person every week. I want to do different characters, and, you know, the way I did on Gary Moore's show. And they had to put us on the air. They did not. That's the only reason I got the show. It never would have happened if I hadn't had that in the contract.
But they didn't think this was a woman's game, doing a variety show.
That's right. That's what they said. You know, Carol, variety, comedy variety is a man's game. It's Jackie Gleason. It's Sid Caesar. It's Milton Berle. And at that time, now it's Dean Martin. You know, and I don't even think of it. Like, you know, being a woman doing it, I just want to do what I did on Gary's show. And, you know, you couldn't do what we did today because we had a 28-piece orchestra.
Wow.
You know, no synthesizers or, you know, fake music.
Yeah.
It was all real.
Yeah.
And we had 12 dancers. Bob Mackie created 60 to 70 costumes a week.
That's amazing.
He would come up with everything everybody wore, whatever you saw on the screen, Bob designed the costumes for.
And I'll tell you, though, this is what killed me when I was a kid, because I was born in 67, so I missed those early years. But when the season ended in May or whenever it was, and you you were mopping up, I hated it because I knew I wasn't going to see you again for months.
Oh.
It was a bummer because, I mean,
that's so sweet.
That was Saturday nights. That was Saturday nights, is making popcorn, getting in your jammies, and watching Carol Burnett for my age. Yeah.
That's the nicest compliment you can give me.
Oh.
Thank you.
Well, I mean it from the bottom of my heart. And it is so much fun to watch those shows. I have to ask you, I'm sure you've been asked this before. You had favorites that were on the show because you gelled with those people, you know, the Ken Berrys, the Jim Nabors. Who was, yes. Was Jimmy Stewart the most exciting guest that you've had on the show that really did something?
Actually, he wasn't a guest. He came on and surprised me on our final show.
On the special evening with Carol Burnett, that's right.
Yeah, the very last show of the 11th season. And I didn't know he was there, but we were friends. And so Tim came out and he said, he interrupted me. I was talking to the audience. He said, there's a guy backstage who's always wanted to be on the show, and I thought you should give him a whirl or whatever it was he said. And I thought, what in the world is Tim talking about? And the curtain went up, and there was Jimmy sitting at the piano.
Wow. I remember that. The curtains opened. That's right.
Oh, and I screamed, and then I started to cry because he was my favorite actor.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah, and so he wasn't what you would call a regular guest that week, but he came on. He played us and sang his favorite song, Ragtime Cowboy Joe. And then he came over and talked to me, and he said, in essence, he was very complimentary about our 11 years and so forth and whatever. And I was just blubbering like a baby. I was just so touched. And they hid him all day in a dressing room, so, wow, you know, out of sight, so I wouldn't see him.
What a nice
gift. He and his wife came, and they were just kind of hanging out backstage, you know. And I had no idea that he was going to do that. But it was it was one of the most thrilling things that ever happened to me on the show.
What a lovely gift.
Yeah.
What a lovely gift. And what surprises me is you guys did the show a couple times. You know, you did a more of a dress rehearsal, and then you did the actual show. I mean, that's a lot of work.
We taped around 5 o'clock, the dress rehearsal, and we would tape that, and then we'd break and have notes and maybe rewrite a couple of things and then have a different audience come in, and then we'd do the show at 8. But we didn't – we would go pretty much straight through because I never wanted to keep the studio audience waiting. So I'd make quick costume changes, since the scenery would go fast, and we'd be out of there. We'd take maybe an hour and 15 minutes, and we'd be out of there in about 2 hours, 15 minutes. Yeah. Because now some shows today, I mean, they go to 1 or 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, they keep doing pickups and this and that, and the audience is long gone. And it, I don't think it makes it any better.
Well, you did it almost close to live. I mean, you tried to
I was a bug about that because I didn't want to keep the studio audience waiting. And if they got bored and we couldn't get their, you know, get them to respond, then we weren't that good. You know what I'm saying? And so we really kept it going, you know. And I would make a bet with the stagehands that I could do a skin-out change faster than they can move a sofa over to the other end of the stage. You know, it's my Broadway training. We'd be out. And in time, we'd finish in time to go to dinner, take the guests to dinner.
How cool is that? Well, the Carol Burnett 50th Anniversary Special airs tonight on CBS. You can catch Carol Burnett and Friends every weeknight at 10 Central on MeTV. Carol's most recent book, In Such Good Company, is available wherever books are sold. And you can purchase The Carol Burnett Show on DVD on TimeLife.com and at Amazon.com. I think I got it all, Carol.
Oh, that's true. Thank you, Dave.
Absolutely. It's been a privilege.
Go get that cocktail.
I'm going to do that. All right. Have a good evening.
Take care.
Bye-bye now.
Bye, darling.
So, how are you, Captain Butler?
How am I? You ask that of a man who just returned from battle? Who returned from seeing brother pitted against brother? From seeing the world that he loved crumble beneath his feet? And you ask, how are you? How are you?
Oh, I'm pretty good, thanks, and you?
I'm a man of many wishes, you see. I wish this filthy war never happened.
I'll tell you one thing, though. I got the half a notion not to hire another secretary.
Well, if that's just a real good, then I will just keep helping you out here in the office.
Next!
From Television City in Hollywood, it's the Carol Burnett Show. With Harvey Korman.
Dave Plyer back with you on 720 WGN. So as the Carol Burnett Show 50th Anniversary Special airs tonight on CBS, Let's look back at my conversation with one of the stars of the show, Tim Conway, and I asked him what his inspiration was behind the characters of Mr. Tudball and Dorf.
Well, mother's friends would come over on Sunday to eat, and they all talk like this. So I think that Mr. Tudball came from that.
I would think so. Yeah.
The others, I have no idea.
Not a clue. Not a clue. So then, in sixth and seventh grade, you discovered you had dyslexia. Let me pronounce that right. Dyslexia. Which you
That's good. Maybe you have it too.
Yeah, maybe I do. Which you said, you know, somehow it contributed to your comical outlook on life. I mean, kids laughed at you as a result? Like, how did you find comedy?
Well, every once in a while, you'd have to get up and read aloud to the class. And when I did, I put words into sentences that were never there. And kids thought I was really actually being funny. So I just decided, what the heck, the laughs are good, and it makes me feel happy. So I'll just continue with it.
Well, you did all kinds of other shows, too, in the 60s. You did the Dean Martin Show and Danny Kaye and Red Skelton. But it was the Gary Moore Show where you first met Carol Burnett.
So Carol came out, and she was doing her show, and I had met her on the Gary Moore Show, and she said, come out and do my show. And I said, okay. I said, how many are you doing in here? And she said, we would like you to do all 33 shows. And I said, well, I don't want to tie myself down that much. So I'll tell you what, I'll do 32, and the last week I'll guest on somebody's show.
Oh,
and
nice.
I would always guest on her show.
Wow.
So,
wow, so really.
33.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it was just 33.
Yeah.
So Carol asked you to do the series in the beginning. Now, it was on for 11 seasons, from 67 to 78, and as a kid, I was under the illusion that you were a regular for all of those 11 years, and even though you were frequent and much beloved guest star, you were only a regular for the last three seasons of the series. That's crazy.
That's correct, yeah. Well, I had to keep that open time, you know, in case I was asked to do another show, and I never was, so I did all 33.
You did
every year.
You did, though. You did. You had the Tim Conway Show in the early 70s. You did an hour variety show.
Yes. I think I hold the record, too, for shows being canceled.
Oh. It might be Don Rickles.
I think it was
eight. Might be Don Rickles.
Yeah. Well, Don and I are tied, yeah.
Yeah.
But we were doing one show. It was a half-hour show. And 15 minutes into the show, the guy came out, the producer, and said, stop doing this. Okay.
Really?
Why? Well, the network is canceling it.
Huh.
Okay. All right. And they canceled it in Cleveland, actually. It started in Cleveland.
Really?
Everything always.
Your hometown. So you did Carol so many times. You know, what? And then obviously a regular. Tell me about your experience working with Carol and Harvey and Vicky on the show.
Well, she was the most marvelous person would ever want to meet. I mean, she just had. She had no. Desire to be the star of the show, although she was, and Harvey had a desire to be the star of the show, which he wasn't, and I told him that, you know.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, Harvey and I became the best of friends, and he was probably the smartest guy I've ever known, but couldn't tie his own shoes, so I could put him on something terrible and would plan to do that every day.
Well, you know, everybody knows that it obviously didn't take much to throw him, you know, in
that's
a sketch.
Correct, yeah.
But Carol,
he was always telling me, you know, you can't laugh on television because, you know, that it looks so phony. And he would sit there and laugh through the whole thing, you know. So.
Well, you're a funny guy. Well, Carol said it was never, you know, your intention to throw anyone, but you always left room for some ad-libbing to surprise your target. So you made it a mission to not only make the audience laugh, but the performers you were on stage with, obviously, as well.
That's correct, yes. Very poor performance. You know.
But you did, too. You shot the episode when you did it. You shot didn't you shoot it twice in one day?
Yes.
So did you do
once
it different?
In the afternoon, and then the later show at night when we had an audience, we would just go nuts, you know, and throw in anything we thought of. And that's what usually ended up on the air.
So you did you do something different in rehearsal, or did you not do? Did you play it pretty straight during rehearsal?
The first rehearsal in the afternoon, I would play it straight so Harvey could figure out where we were in the sketches and
gotcha.
Things like that.
Gotcha.
But when it came to air, we just took off. And sometimes I wasn't even there.
Nice. Nice.
Yes. Try and find me.
Try and find you. Too many to choose from. You know, the Dennis sketch being one of the most popular, the old man, Mr. Tudball, and various characters you played from week to week. I heard you tell a story that the Dennis sketch was actually influenced by one of your own dentists.
Yes, it was. He was going to fill a back tooth of mine, and he took the Novocaine needle, and he stuck the needle into my cheek from the inside of my mouth. It went through my cheek and into his own thumb.
Oh, jeez.
And he immobilized his hand, so I thought, well, this will be swell. So that's what it really came from. And eventually we did the sketch where I immobilized my entire body.
Your entire body. That was the legendary Tim Conway. Vicki Lawrence also spent 11 years on The Carol Burnett Show. And when I spoke with her, I asked her to share the story on how she first met Carol Burnett.
I briefly wrote her a fan letter because everybody said I looked like her. And she came to see this whole contest I was going to be in. And it just so happened that she was right in the midst of starting to put together the Carol Burnett Show. She was in the middle of moving to, she I think had just moved to California from New York, and it was just very serendipitous timing.
Well, you were very, you know? I mean, you were in high school, you know, first of all. Second of all, like, how did you know of Carol? Was it seeing her on Gary Moore? Was it Broadway? Was it her TV appearances? Like, what got you interested in Carol herself?
I actually, at the time, she was on a show, or just, you know, shortly before this, was on a show called The Entertainment with Bob Newhart. She and Bob Newhart were co-hosts, I believe.
Okay.
And John Davidson was like your little cute sing-a-song-every-week guy, and I had a crush on him.
Wow.
I watched that show, probably mostly, sorry, Carol, because of John Davidson. And I do remember, you know, Once Upon a Mattress was our senior musical in high school. So I knew the show very well. Do you remember seeing that on television?
Yep, yep.
Yeah. That's pretty much how I knew her. I mean, I was really trying to marry Tyler Moore, Dave. I was trying very hard.
I knew that. I knew that she was... Your capris?
I wore my hair just like Mary did. I wore the capris just like Mary did. I thought she was absolutely adorable. I was trying very hard to be her. But then when I cut my hair short right before I went into high school, everybody started saying I was like Carol Burnett.
Yeah, which you absolutely do. Now, I want to dip back a little bit. What were the first days like getting ready for that show? You know, it must have been surreal because and nervous as well because, I mean, you were part of this fabulous ensemble. It was CBS, first of all, didn't want to give Carol a variety show. They thought that was just a guy's game. And
right.
And I know, you know, they wanted to give her a sitcom, and she was like, no. And they were kind of contractually obligated to do this in the late 60s
right.
when variety was so big already for the last two decades. But now you're creating a brand new show. What were those first days like?
You know, I wasn't really privy to any of the stress or the tension or any of that stuff that's going on. I was hired in the beginning just to play her sister in a recurring sketch called Carol and Sif. And I get a kick out of watching Mad Men because it's such a beautifully done reminder of what that period was like and how much we have changed, you know?
Yeah.
We really, I mean, I was talking to Carol not too long ago. She said, oh, my God, the stuff we did in the 60s. But you're like, what? You don't do that. Get the, you know? Women, get your self-esteem together.
That's funny. That's...
You don't talk that way. You don't, you know.
But you know what? That back then, we haven't seen that as viewers, as fans. You know, those shows haven't been ever available on DVD, and they haven't been part
they
of those Carol Burnett. Yeah, no.
They have not been unearthed. But we did do, I have to say, some pretty great stuff in the very first few years. But anyway, No, I didn't have any stress. I was a child. I was too stupid to know. You know, Harvey used to say, forget stage right or stage left. You can't even find the ladies' room. So, you know, I think being the team player that he was, he took me under his wing and really tried to teach me everything he could about comedy. And I think, I feel like I had a private tutor, you know?
Yeah, that's very cool.
Carol was busy running the show. And I look back on it now and I think, what an incredibly special place that was to grow up and to learn, because that just doesn't happen. That kind of atmosphere doesn't happen in show business very often.
No, it absolutely
doesn't. You don't run into that.
Mm-mm.
And you know, I don't think it would happen nowadays what happened to me, because, I mean, nowadays, if you're not Carrie Underwood out of the box, the judges are going to vote you off. If the judges don't, America will, you know?
Yeah, they don't take the time. There used to be time for a show to breathe. Yeah, there used to be times for shows to breathe a little bit. I mean, as soon as, you know, two episodes and you're done. And I know you guys used to do two shows on Friday, which had been so grueling. I mean, you're talking about two full shows. You know, sometimes they do a walkthrough, and then they do the live show for taping. You actually did two live shows for taping.
We did. We taped it twice. There was rarely very much editing done. I mean, they'd edit between those two shows if they needed to, but I think that's why people love watching it so much, because it is like being there live, you know, you get to see pretty much at home what the audience saw.
Well, and what I love, too, is, you know, over the course of that series, you know, you and Harvey and Tim and Lyle and Carol, you know, you guys always step back and allow the guest star to be the kind of the big focus of the show, which I really loved, because you let them kind of shine in all of this. And you guys were all just kind of supporting, you know, the big grand star that was on.
Well, that was Carol. You know, that's all Carol. I mean, there's definitely a trickle-down theory in show business that comes from the top, and she's a very special lady. There aren't a lot of people. I mean, the older people that worked on Carol's show used to say to me when I was 18 years old, you wait till you get out into the real world of showbiz, kid, because this ain't it. She's just incredibly giving and supportive and nurturing. I mean, you know, I'd be sitting over in the corner with my three lines to say at Carol's this. And she would say, we need to fix page 2, so-and-so, I don't like that. She'd say, Vicki needs a better joke on page 14. And I'd say, I do. And she'd say, hush now. Yes, you do.
Yeah, very rare. That's very rare. It's a great lesson.
Yeah, very special lady.
And again, you can catch the Carol Burnett Show 50th Anniversary Special tonight at 7 Central on CBS. We'll be right back.